Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, it's Lean Keys Real Talk. I'm not sure what number episode it is, but that's pretty much irrelevant at this stage of the game. Yo, Lee, what's going on, bro? How you doing?
Oh, man, chilling, bro. You know, just hanging in there. It's hot as hell outside. Got the triple digits today. Got out there
the
cut my grass. Yeah, man, got out there cut the grass real quick. So, you know, I'm ready, bro. How about yourself? How you doing?
Locked in. Yeah, no, that's how I'm feeling. I'm, you know what I'm saying, staying cool in the AC, grinding at a safe level, at a nice and cool level. Can't have anybody out here passing out.
Yeah, man, hydrate.
We're getting
hydrate,
to it. I'm
hydrate.
Locked in. Oh yeah, man, I got some water right here. I'm good. I got fruit. We're doing it. We're good.
Yeah. Well, let me go ahead and say this now to the listener audience. Hey, your boy Lee, allergies are acting up today, so forgive me, but my allergies are acting up really bad today. But I'm ready though. I'm ready to talk.
All right, let's get it. We actually have a caller on the line right now, so we'll. You know what? Should I introduce the topic, and then we'll jump to caller?
Yeah, introduce all the topic right. First.
That's how I'll do it. That's how I'll do it. You want me to introduce it? You want me to kick it off?
Yeah, go ahead, kick it off.
All right, word. So that's what happened. We'll break it down. Less than 30 seconds. All right, here we go. So basically, Justin Gaethje and Michael Chandler were going to fight, two top five UFC lightweights are scheduled to fight. Pretty much the second biggest fight at what's supposed to be at the MSG card, the Madison Square Garden card in New York, you know, the annual event in New York every November. And basically, New York just went into a state of vaccine mandates, and basically you have they've implemented a vaccine passport in New York now, so we all kind of know that that's going to jurisdict Madison Square Garden as well. So if the fighters are going to be, you know, that's for the foreseeable future, and if the fighters are going to be fighting MSG, they have to be vaccinated. So Justin Gaethje came out and was saying, fuck New York, on a live stream. I think he was on with ESPN. He might have been on with Okamoto. He was like, fuck the state of New York, I don't want to fight there. So we kind of already understand where he's at with that. Chandler said he won't be vaccinated by November 6th. So, you know, he kind of made his stance on that. And then Dana White followed up the comments and came out and said that, you know, that won't be a thing in the UFC. There won't be any vaccine mandates, and he won't be forcing any of his fighters to get vaccinated. And he said that'll never be a thing in the UFC. So we're going to break that down. That's really recent news. Going to break that down right now. Let me jump the caller into the call right now. We'll get to it. Yo.
Yo, is that me?
Yeah. What's up, bro?
Hey, what's up, bro?
Yeah, you sound good, by the way.
Sounds good?
You sound
okay.
Good. I figured you'd ask,
perfect.
So you sound good. I got you.
Yeah,
you get
I'm going to the car right now. Yeah. No, I'm all over this, bro. I'm very interested to talk about this. I guess, Ray, we're watching a little about me. I'm a casual UFC fan, but avid political junkie. So I like that the two worlds are colliding here. Let's get into it.
Yeah, let's go. Let me start off. First of all, as I've been saying the whole time, even when we go to close out the show, getting vaccinated should be a personal choice. I understand that, you know, some powers that be want certain groups of people to be vaccinated, like the military, federal employees, doctors, nurses, things like that. But at the same time, it's like if you're a regular old person, you should have – that should be your choice. And I kind of agree with Dana White as far as his stance on his fighters, as far as not mandating them to be vaccinated, because as we've seen with the NFL, their players are on a hard stance that, you know, some teams are, you know, heavily vaccinated and some teams aren't. But the NFL has came out and said that if we have to cancel any games due to COVID breakouts, the players won't get paid for that game. So if you look at some of the players, they make all some players make almost $200,000 per game. So you taking that check away. I think the NFL stance is one of those ones where, you know, they only have 17 games. Then you get the playoffs. Then you get the Super Bowl. So I understand where they're coming from. But, you know, man, people got to look at fighters as being independent contractors. Fighters work for themselves, but they fight for a company. I have no problem with guys saying that they don't want to fight. But at the same time is you only get a certain number of fights per year. So are you financially stable enough where you could afford to not fight at MSG this year, and then you got to fight in Florida or Texas probably in December or starting the first quarter of 2022. So, you know, man, I understand where Dana White is coming from. I understand where the fighters are coming from. But at the same time, every state gonna have their own laws. So if you are slated to fight in a state, before you sign up for that fight, you know, you might want to find out what kind of COVID restrictions they have or mandates they have. And, you know, Gaethje and Chandler, they're probably not going to fight in MSG. They probably end up fighting on a card probably the December 30th, the end of the year card. So we'll see what happens, man. But I'm not mad at Dana White. I'm not mad at the fighters. I think getting vaccinated should be a personal choice.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I mean,
I
you want to jump
in, Keith? Yeah, so what I was going to say is that, like, on a regular level, on an everyday level, it's kind of a different conversation than when I'm talking about the U.S., how Dana White should govern the UFC. It's kind of like a different thing than me comparing that to talking about the vaccine with my neighbor. To me, it's kind of a different, I feel like it should be kind of held to a different standard, because, I mean, one, I don't really want to see the fighters be forced to get vaccinated. I don't think many of them will even accept that anyways. I think even if they were to try that, even if Dana White were to try that, which I don't think he ever would, I don't think that many of these fighters would even compete for the UFC anymore. I think you'd see a lot of guys walk away and go fight. We all can see there's plenty of other opportunities out there to fight. Now, a lot of these guys know that you could go fight for Triller tomorrow and go fight Jake Paul if you want to and make a bag right there. These fighters know that. Like, you don't need to fight in the UFC. So I think a lot of these guys would walk away. But I don't think he would do that anyways. You know, I think he's – if you look at COVID, I mean, he was – Dana White's always going to go the opposite way of the crowd. You know, that's pretty much the kind of guy that I see him as. Obviously, I don't know him personally, but – you know, if you look at the COVID pandemic when it started, every sport in the world, you know, pretty much tucked themselves and hid away somewhere and shut down everything and laid off everybody and nobody was getting paid and it was terrible, along with businesses. And who was the only one that was there that never stopped and pretty much kept going the entire time? Dana White did. You know, all those fighters were getting paid the entire time. There was no stop. And that was one thing, actually, that you know, I need to find the link to it, and I should bring that up. Dana White was on a podcast the other day, and he said some of the realest stuff about how he did that and not wanting to stop, you know, these guys' money, you know, because of the pandemic, where a lot of other sports were doing that. But yeah, he's always the guy that's going to go against the crowd. So where, you know, governments are mandating the vaccine everywhere, you know, it doesn't surprise me that he says, "Fuck that, I'm never doing that. We're never doing that." And you know, I agree with that decision. You know, especially since the UFC is you know, their COVID guidelines, the way that they've been moving since COVID even started, you know, it has been so strict. Like, they're so on the ball with this stuff that I don't even think it would be necessary to even have them get vaccinated, because these guys, I mean, they literally went to a remote island and they've still been doing it, you know, up until recently, and sometimes they still go to fight out. They literally bought a whole island, went down there, and pretty much that was their own quarantine, and all the fighters are separated in the hotel. They can't interact. They get tested, I think, like, every hour or two, you know, leading up until their fight. And you know, even if they – we just saw Amanda Nunes tested positive, and she was supposed to defend her title. She tested positive, like, the day before the fight, and they pulled her off the card. So, you know, they've been playing it very, very –
the regulation working. They wouldn't have done that. Dana White didn't choose to do this. He was forced to do it by people who know better.
Okay.
And he adapted. And they were fine. I mean, so that's the thing. I don't blame Dana White for not forcing his fighters to get vaccinated. That's totally within his right as a business owner, you know. That's why it shouldn't be on him. He's not the one who – he doesn't know anything about vaccines. He doesn't know if it's good or not. There are experts who do, and they've put forth that you should get vaccinated, and I think the government should enforce it. I'm kind of sick of this whole snowflake culture. We got to be sensitive to a bunch of idiots who don't know anything. The vaccine is safe. The vaccine is safe. There's no, if there was any alarm bell going off, I would be the first to say, like, don't take it. But there are not. There are no legitimate concerns about this vaccine, and that needs to be stated. And the thing that does bother me is that by Gaethje going out there and say, you know, fuck this or whatever. Like, you know, he's someone people look up to, and he's spreading doubt about something that there is no doubt about. And that's just silly. It's like, yeah, is it a personal decision? All right, fine, your body, your choice. I believe in that. But at the same time, I also think that we should mandate it because there's a lot of things we do for public health that need to be regulated. If we don't regulate them, people will act badly. And that's, I guess, my point off what you were saying, Keith, is that you said that UFC did a really good job of following the rules. That's because they have to. Like, and so we need to set out good rules for them to follow. It's, you know, yeah, it's not Dana White's job to decide if vaccines are good or not. But I do take that hardline stance. Like, I wish that there was a government mandate that forced people to get the vaccine. Like, if you don't love it, leave it. Like, if you live in the first world, you're going to take first world medicine, feel free to leave this country, go to the third world where they don't have vaccines. Like, it's just such, it's silliness.
So the only thing out of that was, that I don't think he was forced to do was to, you know, spend all that money on Fight Island. No, I think that was his choice and the owner's choice. I don't think that was, and to me, that was part of a COVID protocol to even invest in that. So to me, that part out of anything, I see what you're saying on the other parts of it, but as far as the guidelines, but I think the Fight Island was the owners saying, well, if we're going to bring the fighters out, you know, we want to keep it safe, you know, the same way that the NBA chose to do the NBA season, but they played in a bubble. So when they went there, it was like they stayed there for the whole season. That was more or less what Fight Island was. Like during the lead up to their fight, they were stationed at, but they stayed there that whole time. They can't stay there all year long because the fights are spaced out. It's not like the NBA where you have games back-to-back nights. But for the majority of the time, in every event was at Fight Island. So the fighters were literally only going to their rooms. There was no partying. There was no meeting up. Like, Fight Island was very strict. They actually kicked a fighter out of the UFC for letting somebody onto the island that was never you know, they never had his identification. He, like, snuck somebody onto the island, and he got, like, kicked out of the UFC for going against the guidelines. So, Lee, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, hey, man, what's your name?
My name's Gabe. Call me AZ, though.
All right. I agree with most of everything you said. But I think this is the main reason, Keys, that Dana White won't make his fighters do it, and nobody really thought about this until it just stuck in my head. You know, if you make fighters do something, you know what that leads to? Fighters unionizing. Dana White do not want fighters unionizing. If the fighters unionize, Dana White and the UFC will be in trouble. And it won't just be over the vaccination. When you start a union, it's going to be over health care, pay, travel. It's going to be over a whole lot of stuff. And I guarantee you, he is looking at it from that lens instead of the lens of keeping his fighters happy. He knows that if he mandates that vaccine, that the fighters will unionize, And that is the one thing he does not want within the UFC.
That would be so silly, though. Like, if they finally choose to unionize over something that's actually, like, in their best interest instead of all the abuses that they do face. That would be hilarious. But I'd be for it. Hey, if it gets them to unionize, I'm all up there.
Hey, yeah. Stranger things have happened, bro. Stranger things have happened to make people come together.
Yeah, you're right.
So, I mean, I think what ends up happening is, like, regardless if we think that it should be mandated or not for everybody or for the fighters or whatever level it's on, professional sports or for regular people, whether that's like that be a different thing or it's the same, whether it's a different standard or the same standard, I think what it comes down to for the UFC is that. In reality, I think what will end up happening is they're going to move. I think Dana White wound up moving the event to a different location. And how you said that each state is going to be rolling out their own policies on vaccine mandates and vaccine passports, I think Dana White will just – I think one of two things happens. Either he only travels to the state – either he only holds events like he did last year, only holds events in the states that are not going to have a vaccine requirement where his fighters wouldn't be subject to it, or
Texas and Nevada.
If that doesn't look ideal, then I could see them just going back to Fight Island. I could see them going back to Fight Island because I don't think that, as far as I know, I don't think the I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think the UAE is going to have a vaccine mandate. I could be wrong.
Well, I think they got a card coming up there, though. Well, go ahead, bro.
I was just saying, you know, that's the whole other wrinkle in here is that UFC is a very international sport. You're not just dealing with, like, U.S. regulations. There's, you know, even if Dana White tried to mandate the U.S. fighters, I don't think he'd have – I mean, I guess, yeah, he'd have control over all the fighters because it's his organization. But, yeah, it's just – you're dealing with a lot of competing ideologies here. You know, it's like it definitely gets complicated. That's why I don't blame Dana White for not putting the mandate on. That's, you know, his prerogative. And I'm advocating for – I think the government should because – I think we should believe in science here, but
yeah. But I think another thing that I have to give Dana White credit for, and Keith did say it, and in the beginning of this whole pandemic, I was really pissed off at Dana White because he didn't seem to take it serious. You know, when everybody else was shutting down, he was hell bent on holding cards. Even the Kevin Lee, Charles Oliveira card in Brazil, he was hell-bent on holding that card when everybody else had shut down, and then he really didn't take it seriously. But ever since, I think he's educated himself on it. He's kind of, like my man said, he's kind of been working with countries, states, you know, going by their regulations, probably implementing even more strenuous testing within the UFC. But it's just a tricky situation. Me personally, I work for the government. And, you know, President Biden came out and said, all federal employees will get vaccinated by this date. So, you know, I got a decision to make. But I also know I got to support my family. So, you know, I think the decision is made for me. Now, would I have done it on my own? Yes, because I want to see my mom. I want to go see my family. And I want to travel. So, you know, like I always tell, always in this show on, the vaccine is a personal decision. And for me, it ain't personal no more because it's being mandated for me to do it. Do I have a problem with it being mandated? Yes. But at the same time, no. So it is what it is.
I guess I would just push back on that a little, that it's not always a personal decision, right? It's a public health decision. you know, there are people who literally cannot get the vaccine, who have allergies of some sort or some
immunocompromised,
you know. So it's like, for those people, we need as many people as possible to get this vaccine. And again, like, the red flags people point to are really not red flags. Like, they are flags that go up because there's, like, a little bit of, like, we see some people who have, like, a 0.01% more likelihood to have, like, a harmless nerve disease in the face. I forget what it's called now. But that, you know, it's a statistical anomaly compared to how much the prevalency of that nerve disease in the normal population. So that's how sensitive these red flags are. It's like, even something that probably is absolutely nothing, it's probably just, like, a statistical anomaly that just so happens that 0.01% of people who took the vaccine maybe had the nerve disease than the regular population. But they are paying attention to that kind of stuff. And if there was something actually serious going on, like, there are too many people with eyes on this to not throw up the red flags about it and actually have legitimate doubt about if these are safe or not. So I get the personal decision thing. I love America. I'm all freedom, pro everything. I love that. But there's, you know, there's positive and negative freedom. If everyone's free to murder, that's not freedom. We're all living in fear of being murdered. You know, like, so there's restrictions that have to be put in place to ensure positive freedoms, like everyone being able to go out and be safe, even if you are immunocompromised and you can't get the vaccine. You still deserve the freedom to go out. So if we all have to just go get a free vaccine, that's the other thing. I mean, we luckily made it very available to everyone in our country, which is, we're blessed to live in a country like that. You know, I get a little upset to anybody, like, kind of spreading FUD about it. You know, it's like, this is not legitimate, and it adds to a narrative that's very dangerous. And I think a threat to national security, to be honest. I think America's enemies have interests in attacking us in any way they can. They can't do it militarily. So what if we get all these people to believe propaganda on Facebook that, you know, the thing that's actually going to save their lives and save their grandmother's lives more likely is dangerous to them? You know, so I just feel I have to respect those things.
And plus, Keys, before you go, I think events like these events now, like, I watched the Versus last week between the Locks and Dipset, and there was a lot of people in Madison Square Garden. And I want to say, possibly, when I was looking in the crowd, maybe about a, I ain't even going to say a third, maybe an eighth of the crowd were wearing masks. So you have a potential of a super spreader when you have events like this. So I still worry about stuff like that. Your turn, Keys.
Yeah, so, I mean, at the end of the day, it's definitely, you know, everybody tells everybody to do their own research, but a lot of people they take that to heart too much. And when they do their own research, they think that, like, trumps, you know, the research of people that have been studying, you know, virology for 20 years, you know, and that's not the case. So, like, so the do your own research thing goes a little bit too deep. And I think that's where a lot of the community that is against the vaccine is, you know, a lot of that energy comes from is that they're just, a lot of people are misinformed, you know, about what the vaccine does. And I think there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of fear mongering there. But, you know, as for the UFC, it's okay. I mean, if they were to come out and mandate the fighters to get the vaccine, I mean, I feel like there's good in both. I feel like there's truly good in both. If I'm choosing to mandate the fighters to get the vaccine, I'd say, okay, I think there's definitely a lot of good in that. That'll save a lot of lives. If he doesn't force them to get it, I mean, like I said, they have been, you know, following the guidelines, you know, pretty strictly, you know, for over a year. And I feel like they've done a really good job, you know, and they've definitely gotten a lot more control of things. So, you know, I think it'd be okay. But, yeah, that's pretty much my play on that.
I think he moves the event. I think he won't do it in New York. I think if he does it in New York, basically whoever wants to fight on the Madison Square Garden card, they already know what that entails. That entails you being vaccinated. So, but I think Dana White, being the guy he is, I think he moves it. I think he moves it probably to make what is New Jersey a is New Jersey a passport state?
I think it's New York and like one other state, but I don't think it's New Jersey.
Yeah, so he might move it to New Jersey. That way, you know, people from New York can still attend the event. So he can move it to New Jersey.
Move it to Boston.
Or Boston, that's what I was just about to say. I was like, he's going to move it to Jersey or Boston.
I ain't for the real ones. Hey, I'm not arguing that. We're not arguing that.
It wouldn't be in his best interest to mandate or go along with the New York mandate. He's going to avoid that at all costs for sure. And I can't blame him for that. That's, like I said, I think it would cause a huge shitstorm for him with his fighters. Whether that would lead to unionization or not, I don't know. I mean, as you said, crazier things happen. But it would certainly lead to friction that would be a headache and probably result in a loss of money.
All right, let's look at it. Hey, let's look at it from this point. I mean, it just jumped to my head. You know how long he fought to have UFC events in New York? So, you know, being that he fought for all those years to have events in New York, maybe he bends a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Because he fought, what, seven or eight years to have events in New York? And then finally New York allowed them to come. So, you know, I don't know, man. It's just so tricky.
You think he would ever force on an individual level, like, hey, you're fighting at Madison Square Garden, the regulation there is that you have to be vaccinated, I'm forcing you to vaccinate or you don't fight in the UFC. Do you think he'd ever draw that kind of hard line?
No.
Yeah,
he's not that guy. He's one of those guys that want to go against the grain and be looked at as Guns N' Roses of sports organizations. So, yeah, I just don't see him coming out and doing that.
Yeah, from the business standpoint, I mean, I'm a Dana White fanboy, so I pretty much auto agree with almost anything Dana White says. I'm from my fanboy perspective, Dana White can do no wrong, and I think he's my president.
Okay. All right, man. Let's move on there. You know, that was pretty.
Let's talk about games.
I'll talk about games.
Yo, we got to talk about that heavyweight title fight, man. Derek Lewis. I hate to say it. Derek Lewis looked like he was stuck in the mud in that fight, man.
He looks like a bum.
he looked like he was fighting underwater, bro.
But why was that, though?
I wouldn't even say that. He looked like he was fighting underwater, holding like 2 50-pound weights in his hands. Like, he was trying to hold 2 dumbbells and throw fists with the dumbbells underwater. Like, that's how slow he looked compared to Gain. No, why was that, though? I think it was because, and I have to take it back. You know, I have to take it back. I have to float my own boat or else I'll sink. So, I said that Gain, when he first came in, was going to be a problem. And he came in, and he won every single fight since, and he dominated everybody since. And now he's an interim UFC he's basically a UFC champion. I'm not even going to say interim. He's basically a UFC champion. He's one step from unification. So I think Gain just looks so damn good that Derek Lewis looks bad.
And that goes
to the fact of when we Gang is probably the most athletic heavyweight in the heavyweight division. When you look at the way he looks going against other heavyweights, he make them look so bad because of his outstanding athleticism. He bounces on his feet. He's in and out of the pocket. He's quick. He's light on his feet. And one thing about Derrick Lewis is like Deontay Wilder of the UFC. He's always looking for that one shot. And if he can't land that one shot, he can't win a fight. Just like Deontay Wilder would never beat Tyson Fury if he can't land that one shot. So I think Gane, man, he looked freaking amazing Saturday. Derrick Lewis didn't look like he even deserved to be in the same octagon as Gane Saturday. Especially when he started chopping his legs, it was over. It was over. You see, Derrick Lewis couldn't even move. It was like, I was like, damn, Derrick, you going to do something? But he couldn't. It was like he couldn't do nothing.
He could have done something.
What could he do when you look at his skill set? What can he do when you look at his skill set? He's not a wrestler. He's not a grappler.
He can do what he started to do when he realized that he was about to lose. He started swinging. But, like, you got to come in with some of that energy. I know it's a risk. You open, especially in the heavyweight. I know when you go for something, you're putting
yourself
out there.
Exactly, yeah, I agree.
It has to come to you. But you have to go for it. You can't just hobble the whole time. Like, and that's the thing. Like, because I'd rather see you go down swinging than, like, bounce around like a bum the whole time and then, like, kind of get embarrassed by this dude who, yeah, makes – it's probably actually just skill levels above him, but also just really made him look like they're not even in the same sport, in the same league.
Yeah.
You know, like, I would like to see him just make it look better.
Lee, I think we've come to a new narrative about Derrick Lewis, man. Tell me whether or not you agree. Derrick Lewis
one-trick pony.
Well, yeah, he's a one-trick pony, but I feel like Yeah, he is a one-trick pony, that's true. But at the same time, he just can't seem to win the big fight. Every time he's under that big spotlight, and look at this. He wins the fights that aren't as big of a deal. He wins the fights that it's not that crazy if he wins or not. Like, he's going to fight Volkov, okay, cool. He's going to fight Curtis Blaydes, it's like, okay, cool. Maybe he knew he was getting a title shot, but it's not the same thing. He's now 0-2 in title fights. And pretty much in both of those title fights, he looked pretty underwhelming. And then when he fought Ngannou, he looked extremely underwhelming. And I would say that was probably his next biggest fight besides those two title fights. So really, his three biggest fights, he dropped the ball in all three of them. And two of them were title fights.
Hey,
yeah,
yo, real quick, I'm pulling up the Taco Bell. I'm about to order and probably head off. But thanks for having me on, guys. That was a good chat.
Hey, man, appreciate you, bro. Appreciate you,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I'll have to come back sometime.
Yeah,
for sure.
Do that.
All right, guys, have a good one.
All right, bro.
Get a Baja Blast.
I love the Baja Blast. That's a fact.
All right, man. Take care, bro.
So he was I think, what do you think about that, though? Derrick Lewis pretty much, if you look at it, I mean, what I think were his three biggest fights, his Ngannou fight, you know, the first one, and, well, they haven't had the second one yet, but you know what I mean. I feel like they'll fight again at some point. But, yeah, when he fought Ngannou, I feel like it was his biggest fight. You know, that fight got a lot of hype. You know, I want to say it was either the co-main event or it was the one before the co-main event. They put a lot of marketing behind that fight. You know, there was a lot of hype on that fight.
They both were bad. I can't put all the blame on him. They both were bad in that fight. So,
yeah.
I had to give him 50-50. I got you.
But at the same time, though, that fight was also, I believe, during International Fight Week. It was during International Fight Week. So, I just feel like while it wasn't all his fault, either way, each, you know, that fight, his DC fight, I mean, yeah, he's fighting who is, you know, one of my greatest of all time. I think Cormier is one of the greatest of all time. You know, some people don't think so, but anyways, like, obviously that wasn't an easy fight, you know, and I didn't believe that he had much of a chance to win, but I just feel like at the same time, you know, he didn't put up much of a fight when he needed to, you know, and similar with the Gon fight and similar with the Ngannou fight. It was like all three of those wander on a big stage, you know, when, you know, there was a lot of bets placed on him, you know, a lot of betting money placed on him, a lot of hype around him, you know, a lot of speculation, a lot of eyes on it. And it just seems like, you know, he's starting to be, it might be like how Donald Cerrone used to be, you know, and
I knew you was going to go there. I was just about to say, I'm not ready to put Derrick Lewis in the Cerrone category, and then you go there.
Man. Nah, see, that got to be from years of chopping it. That got to be from years of chopping it up. You just getting to know, you know, what angles I might go with.
Oh, man. I'm not ready to put him in the
You don't
I'm
think
not
he's
ready
at
to put
least,
him in
like, close to it, though? You don't even think he's, like, knocking on the door a little bit?
I think if he loses another, like, if he get another title shot and he loses that, I would say yes. I would say he's one of them guys that puts on entertaining fights but will never win the big one. If he loses, but it all depends on how far he falls. Do they make him fight two more fights? Do they make him fight three fights? Because, you know, the heavyweight division really isn't all that stacked because they don't know what they're going to do with John Jones. Stipe is saying he deserves a trilogy fight with Ngannou, which I kind of agree with, but we already know that we're getting Gon versus Ngannou. Me personally, I'd rather have Stipe fight John Jones, probably on the same card, probably in the co-main event. I think that fight would be big time. You have the GOAT of the heavyweight fighting the GOAT of the light heavyweight. But, hey, man, Derrick Lewis, I'm at the point now, Keys, where if he doesn't add more to his game, you will see more and more heavyweights beating him. Because when you are not adding to your game, you are losing the race in the UFC. And me and you have seen it time and time and time again. Once these guys figure you out, once these guys and girls figure you out, you will go on a massive losing streak unless you get lucky and you catch somebody. So, Derrick Lewis, I'm not ready to put him in the Cerrone category, but he is knocking on the door.
I mean, and I'm not putting him in the cowboy category of late, which is like five fight losing streaks where, like, oh, he just can't really get a win. I'm just putting him in the category of the Cerrone that, you know, lost to Rafael Dos Anjos twice. And then, you know, lost pretty much,
Anthony,
you know, during
Pettis. Did he lose to Anthony Pettis in a title fight? Or was that Benson Henderson? He lost to somebody else in a title fight, too. Then he lost in a title fight in WEC also. So that's why, yeah, man, I'm just not ready to put him in a Derrick Cerrone, the Donald Cerrone category yet.
Derrick Cerrone, man, you already putting their names together, man. You
I know, man. That's my fault,
man. This Derrick Cerrone, but he ain't putting him in
my
the
bad,
same
My bad, Derrick Lewis,
oh,
bro.
Man.
Derrick Lewis, when you listen to the show, that was my bad, dog.
Yo, tomorrow you about to see that on ESPN, bro. They're gonna copy that. One of the reporters is gonna say Derrick Cerrone, man. You're gonna see that because they're gonna be copying our ideas now.
I hope not. Hey, that's one I hope they don't copy. I ain't mean to do that to Derrick.
Kind of sounds good. You kind of don't sound bad, but but what I was gonna say next though is I'm looking at the heavyweight rankings, right? And if you would have picked Derek Lewis's next fight, he pretty much beat. He's pretty much fought everybody in the top five besides Stipe. He fought Game. He got dominated. He fought the champion, but obviously he's not fighting the champion right now. He fought Blades and he beat him. He fought Volkov and he beat him. That's the number 4 and 5, Blades and Volkov. Lewis is 3, Game's 1, and Stipe's 2. So the only fights that I could possibly see for Derek Lewis, I feel like Stipe is the fight that they'll try to make. I think that's the only one that makes sense if you're going to even remotely consider the rankings. And I feel like Derek Lewis won't even take any other fight. Because what fight – has he fought Rozenstruik?
No.
Okay, so Rozenstruik is number 6. So that's probably the only other fight. He would be fighting down, but that's okay. I mean, he's number 3. Rozenstruik's number 6. And Rozenstruik is still, you know, a reputable name.
That's okay.
So I feel like
– That's okay.
Yeah, I feel
that's
like,
okay. I don't mind that fight.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. At first, you know, I was like, okay, number 6. Like, I don't know if he would fight down. You know, if it was maybe like Marcin Tybura in number 6 or, you know, Walt Harris at number 6, like, I don't think he would really go for it. But being that it's Jairzinho, I feel like he's a reputable name, and that's still a banger of a fight. And I think that's a fight that Derek Lewis would – I think Derek Lewis would smile at that fight. I think that's his kind – you know, that's probably a better fight for him right now. But if you want to talk a fight that's going to push him and make him grow – you got to fight Stipe. You got to fight Stipe.
Yep.
It's like the other side of fear for Derek Lewis right now. If you want to do what you're comfortable with, you fight Jairzinho because he's going to fight your fight. But if you fight Stipe, he's only going to make you better. You know, win or lose to Stipe, which none of us are no, that's not frowned upon if you lose to Stipe because he's an all-time great as well to me. That's a fight that's going to only make you better. Either you're going to win it and it's going to bring you back to the title fight, or you lose it and you come back a lot better. That's what I think. I think they should match him up with Stipe.
I think Stipe's next fight is going to be John Jones, bro. I don't know why I feel that way, but I feel Stipe's next fight is John Jones. Would I be mad about Stipe versus Lewis? No. Would I be super excited about Stipe versus Jones? Hell to the yeah. And I will probably have my first fight party in 2 years if that fight was to happen. So, but on with you, I think Rozenstruik is the better matchup for him. If you want a confidence builder, he'll fight Rozenstruik. But if he really want to see if he's championship material, he should fight Stipe.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go. I know. I was listening the other night on YouTube to Winklejohn's interview. Mike Winklejohn. I was listening to his interview with ESPN the other night while I was brushing my teeth, and he was talking about. He was talking about John Jones and how he thinks that he matches up with you know, both Ngannou and Gane, you know, and what, you know, what he thinks. You know, he's not the manager, so he's not the one that would have the decision, but what he thinks would be the timeline for John Jones to fight, you know, and he thinks he's going to fight again. I want to say he said, you know, definitely 2022, and you know, I forget what he said about those two matchups, to be honest, but they definitely asked him about it. So that interview's out there. If you were, it's a good watch. I think you would appreciate that interview.
Yeah, I think I tweeted something Saturday or Sunday. I'm trying to find it. I think it was maybe under the LKE page, because I was saying that how Gane is so athletic that if you were to pit him against John Jones, you will probably have the most athleticism in UFC history in one fight in the heavyweight division. And I'm I don't think I'm too far off base with that.
Yeah, I think that I think John's athleticism and Gaines' athleticism would be a really interesting fight. I probably sound very favored to Gaines right now. I mean, I kind of am, but obviously
yeah.
Jones and Ngannou is a massive fight. You know, that's the fight I want to see as well. But you know, just looking at the athleticism and looking at the style, you know, I think those two guys would be a really fun fight to have. You know, it might not happen, but it may happen. You know, who knows? Ngannou might beat Gaines, so you might not even get Jones and Gaines. But if it were to go the other way, Gaines beats Ngannou, then, you know, in that case, you know, Jones, who knows? Stipe, who knows what Stipe might do? I don't know what plays out with that. But, you know, Jones,
but I thought,
you know, what do you say?
But I saw on a tweet, Uncle Yagi posted it 2 days ago. He was like, y'all noticed something, John Jones been hella quiet. He normally not quiet like this. And then I replied to his tweet. I said, to be honest with you, it's a good thing that he's quiet. Quite sure his agents are being loud behind the scenes. But a fight between him and Gon would feature two of the most athletic heavyweights in history. And then I put in parentheses, I might be being a little hyperbolic. But I really do believe that him and Gon would be part of the most athletic heavyweight fight that we will probably get in UFC history to date. Because there are guys coming up the pipe that are probably a little bit more athletic, a little bit faster, that can do more things. But if you was to get Gon and Jones in the ring within the next 6 months, it would definitely be the most athletic heavyweights in history in the one octagon.
So I have one or two other things that I want to run by you, things that we haven't got to talk about yet. One of them is brand new news, and one of them dropped like a couple days ago, but I never really got your take on it. Which one do you want first? The brand new news?
Oh, we do the brand new news last.
All right, so I don't remember if I got your take on it. What do you think about the Cody Garbrandt, you know, moving down to flyweight to fight my boy Kaikara France? I think that's a banger. What do you think about that matchup, though? And Cody going down to flyweight. That's the part of it that kind of has me feeling some type of way. I don't know how I feel. What do you think about it?
To me, when you move down a division, it kind of signals to me as a fan that you feel that you aren't competitive in the current division you are in. So you are going down to try to probably be a little bit more competitive. I think Kara France is probably a good matchup for Cody, but the one thing about Kara France that Cody needs to worry about is Kara France isn't just a stand-up fighter. Kara France will take you down and try to submit you. So if he thinks he's going to go down to 125 and just go down there and, you know, knock these guys out because he probably might have a power advantage. Those guys at 125 are going to have the speed advantage because they're used to fighting in high-paced, action-packed fights. So can Cody cardio stand up to the top guys at 125? That's yet to be determined. Has his defense improved? We know he's susceptible to anything that's related to a right hand punch, right hook, right jab. Can he defend the right hand punches? We still don't know. So, you know, man, I think he's doing it to try to title chase, but at the same time, at 125, you got Brandon Moreno, who's a champ that can go. Figueiredo can still go. Kyra France is a guy that can go. I think they got the guy Askarov down there that can go. So there are guys at 125 that can go. So it's not going to be easy for him to just go down there and stack up wins. I don't agree with. I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I think it's it definitely makes me worried. You know, he's going down. I feel like the bantamweight division is kind of passed him by a little bit. You know, as far as the top of the division's gotten, and I don't think that's really a terrible look on Cody. You know, being that he's been losing fights at bantamweight, because if we're being honest, the bantamweight division is, I mean, and we don't even need to say that on this show because we've been very vocal about that. But the 135 division is just unbelievable. Like, the competition there is just stacked. Like, there is no, we said it the other day, like, there's really no easy fights in the top 15. Like, you really can't get lucky with the fight there. Like, there is very, very high-level fighters everywhere in the rankings at 135. So for Cody to be struggling there, I don't really think is to say that he's, you know, that he can't bounce back, because I think he's just been fighting, you know, he's been fighting really tough guys. Like, I feel like it's similar to Kevin Lee, where Kevin Lee hasn't really done too well, you know, in the past 3-4 years. You know, he's probably lost more fights than he's won. You know, same with Cody. I mean, Cody's only won one fight. You know, Kevin Lee, I think, has won two fights, maybe three fights, but they both have more losses than wins in the past 4 years, I want to say. And I think they're it's kind of a parallel with that, where I feel like Kevin Lee, you know, he's been losing, but he's been fighting, you know, he's been stepping up to fight the absolute top of the heap every single time. Like, that guy doesn't take easy fights or fights that he thinks he can win. Like, that's not, and neither one of those guys really do that, but I think the difference is that Cody just needs to make some adjustments, you know? And I think the fact that he, you know, was starting to resort to his wrestling a little bit, even though it didn't really work, versus, who did he fight? Rob Font. You know, he fought Rob Font, and it didn't really work. I still think that he was even attempting takedowns is a good sign. You know, I think that's a good sign. I don't know how it will play out at flyweight versus Kaikara France. I don't know how that will play out. But I think overall, the fact that Cody's even having takedowns attempted in his fights, as where before he wasn't even shooting at all, I think is a step in the right direction. I think it's a good, that's a good adjustment to make. You know, it shows that he's putting in, you know, that kind of work. So I like seeing that.
I'm gonna ask a question. I know your answer, but I'm gonna ask it anyway, cause you might surprise me. Is Cody running away from the stripper competition to fight what he may seems to be winnable competition, you think? Or do you think he just feels that 125 is better suited for him?
For Cody?
Yeah.
You know, it definitely, the side of it that's scary for me is just seeing the way that TJ looked when he went to flyweight. So I'm kind of comparing it to that in my head, you know, just picturing how TJ looked and how that affected him. And, you know,
TJ is a better fighter than him.
Huh?
And TJ is a better fighter than him.
Yeah, I think TJ is a better fighter than him. I'm looking at, too, like, the way it affected TJ's chin, you know, because I just, like, if you ask me, like, I thought Cejudo was talking, you know, talking trash to TJ, saying that, you know, he would knock him out again. It's like, you know, if Cejudo were to go up and run that one back at 135, like, that fight would be entirely different. You know what I'm saying? Like, Cejudo fought a compromised Dillashaw in that fight. He didn't fight the TJ Dillashaw. He fought, you know, a drained out Dillashaw that literally had to pull out all the stops to even make the weight. Like, he was doing everything to make the weight, and he looked like a skeleton, you know, at 125. That was a bad, bad weight cut. Like, he was, I know a lot of fighters say bad weight cut, but that was bad. Like, he should not have moved down. You know what I'm saying? That was a, he was very compromised overall. He was very, very physically compromised. And I don't think Cejudo, you know, I don't think Cejudo would have the same odds at 135. You know, I think TJ puts the beats on him at 135. But Cody at 125, you know, I think Cody's always been long, but I never really felt like he was a big bantamweight. You know what I'm saying? I never really felt like, oh, this guy could go up and fight at 145. Like, I never really thought that. I always thought, like, all right, like, he's, you know, he wasn't big. He was just long. You know what I'm saying? He was a little bit long compared to those guys. And I think that he was confident too. You know, I think he was in such a, you know, he kind of had that aura a little bit, you know, he was in a good mindset, you know, for a long time. I think he was locked in, but I never really felt like he was a big bantamweight. Some people might disagree with that, but I don't really think he was a big bantamweight. And so at 125, you know, I think there's a possibility, you know, he might look, maybe that's a good weight for him. Who knows? It might be.
Do you think he has the speed to fight at 125?
I mean, he has had the speed. I mean, I know those guys, I mean, compared to those guys who are already conditioned for the weight, and Kai Kara France is a very fast fighter, you know, keeps pace. You know, his cardio is very good. I mean, we haven't seen Kai Kara France in a 5-round fight, I don't believe, you know, to this point. But, you know, at least in a 3-round fight, he comes to fight, and he's in there even in round three. He's kind of similar to TJ, where round three, I mean, he's still swinging. Yeah, he looks tired, but he's still keeping pace, and he's still pushing, you know, he's still putting pressure on you, you know, in round three. That's kind of the guy that he is. That's kind of the fighter he is. So does Cody have the speed? I think more likely than not, you know, I think he'll be able to, I think more likely than not, he has the speed to fight at 125.
All right, cool. I think Cody, man, I really don't want to disrespect Kara France by saying this, but I think the UFC gave him a favorable matchup in his first fight at flyweight. Kara France is a tough guy. He can't do it all, but he did get lucky in his last fight because he was getting kind of beat up in his last fight until he did catch the guy and he finished him. But he was getting pieced up. So I think the UFC gave him kind of sort of a favorable matchup in his first fight. So if I was to pick right now, I would probably go Cody, man. I probably would pick him to win this fight against Kara France. But in the words of Keys, actually, I would be disappointed if Cody lost because I want to see what he could do at 125. So I would be disappointed if he was to lose. So I'm not gonna go in a word of Keys. I would be disappointed if he lost.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping to see him win. I mean, we'll see how it plays out, though. I mean, one more thing I wanted to ask you before we get off. This news came out today. It was brand new. It was a couple hours ago. Justin Gaethje, I think he either posted on Twitter or Instagram. He predicts that the lightweight title fight. He predicts Poirier. I think he said, I don't remember if he picked a round or not. I'm not sure if I remember him picking the round. I think he just picked how he would win. Poirier to KO Charles Oliveira in the title fight to win the belt. And then he predicted himself to, I forget how what he really said, but he predicted himself to beat Chandler. And for them to, for him to get his rematch of that 2018 classic that we had, that was more so the words he used. He referenced, and that fight is a classic to that point. That's very much a classic. What do you think about those predictions?
I don't know why everybody keeps sleeping on Charles Oliveira.
That's what I said. Yo, all right, keep going, but that's exactly what I thought. Keep going.
I don't know why everybody keeps sleeping on Charles Oliveira. You know, at first it was Charles Oliveira can't strike. Then he worked on that. Then it was he can't beat big names. Then he beat big names. It just seems like Charles Oliveira is just a respected guy. But if you go back and look at his record, there's a reason why he's been disrespected, because he could never beat big names. But I don't think Dustin is going to cakewalk into a KO knockout of Charles Oliveira. I think if Charles Oliveira finds himself in trouble on the feet, he's going to do what he did against Chandler. He's going to take Oliveira down. I mean, he's going to take Dustin down and put Dustin in his world where he's more comfortable. I just don't see Dustin having a cakewalk win over Charles Oliveira. So if Dustin wins, it's going to be a hard-earned fight. It ain't going to be one where, you know, he just outclasses Charles Oliveira, man. I just don't see that happening. Now, am I all for Gaethje Poirier 2 for the belt? Yes, I'm all for that fight. But I think Oliveira could possibly beat Gaethje also, because Gaethje isn't a guy that likes to go to the ground. So Charles Oliveira can do it all. So it ain't like he's coming in there saying, man, if I don't hit this guy with my right, if I don't get a right hook to the face, I don't have a chance of winning this fight. Charles Oliveira can do it all, man. And I'm tired. I know I'm going to let Key say it, but I'm going to say it first. This Charles Oliveira slander has to stop, man. Get that man his props.
Yeah, y'all better calm down with that, because he, you know, he's proven himself. You know what I'm saying? And he faced adversity. And I agree with you. I don't think Gaethje would be able to – I don't think he has a submission defense like Chandler had. Chandler did some amazing work prevent getting submitted when he was brought down to Charles World. Well, that sounded weird. When he was brought down to the mat, and when Oliveira tried to make it his fight and choked Chandler out early in the fight, I want to say that was the first round, and Chandler
first
just
round.
Did some amazing. Yeah, first round. Chandler did some very, very, very impressive work. He was very prepared to, you know, for that. You could tell that he was, you know, that he was already skilled there, but he was prepared for that. He expected, you know, to have to defend being choked out like that. He knew he'd end up in that position, and he did amazing work to stop it. I don't think Gaethje will be able to stop it. He might try, but I don't think he'll be able to stop it. I think Oliveira would win, would choke Gaethje out probably if he was in that same scenario. But I would love to see that rematch between Dustin and Gaethje. But Oliveira overall, people got to stop putting more respect on the man, because even though he's got like 5, 6, 7 losses on his record, he's still the world champion. You know what I'm saying? It's like Bisping was. Bisping had losses on his record, but he was still the world champion. He still knocked out the champion, you know. And maybe that's why, you know. Maybe I just answered our question. Maybe that's why people don't respect Oliveira yet. Maybe they feel like, oh, he never beat the champion, or he never beat, you know, one of us. You know, maybe they feel like that because he fought Chandler, who, you know, just kind of came into the UFC. But that would be kind of slighting Chandler then, if that's how they feel about that. So. Because Chandler is a former champion. So, to me, you know, I think it's valid. I think Oliveira, you know, he has every claim to the title. You know what I'm saying? I don't think, you know, who do they want him to beat? You know what I'm saying? And I just think that – I think his fight with Dustin will be a lot more competitive than these guys are giving him credit for.
I totally agree. But before we get off, I know we're in overtime. I got to let my man Keys vent before we get off. Keys, tell the people about Bobby Green and how disappointed me and you are in the decision of the Bobby Green fight and also the bad judgment Tisha Torres fight. But go ahead.
We definitely don't have time. I don't have time to talk about both of them in depth, but I'll just kind of breeze over them. Tisha Torres looked absolutely incredible. I was blown away by how good she looked. I was literally speechless with how strong and fast. Like,
oh,
every
my
time,
God, she looked fast.
Every time Angela Hill threw something or every time Torres, you know, defended a strike, she would spin around and come back with a spinning back fist. I was like, oh, my God, this is crazy. Like, this girl came in not
prepared to lose. Like, she was not coming there to lose to anybody. Like, Tisha Torres didn't come there to lose to anybody. Like, she looked indestructible in there. It was crazy. You know, she wouldn't go down. She was not going to take it down. Everything you threw at her, she was coming right back in a millisecond with a counter strike. She was just a beast. Her footwork was crazy. Her boxing looked excellent. I feel like her stance looked so excellent. Everything looked so top level. You know what I'm saying? She looked super game in there. And then Bobby Green looked excellent too. Even though I think he more than likely lost the first two rounds, I think the first two rounds were close rounds. And either way, that was an excellent fight. I hope both of them got performance bonuses for the fight. But I thought Bobby Green stole the fight because he dominated the third round to what I feel like was a 10-8 round. And I don't know how there was actually a judge who I saw on Twitter, a judge that gave
the third round.
How did you give him the third round? There's got to be like an objection rule, man. There's got to be like an extra judge or somebody that can object to this shit, because there's no possible way. Even if you explain how they won the round, it just doesn't add up to me. When you have the strikes for Bobby Green was like 70 something. Bobby Green landed like, I think, like 75 significant strikes in the round, and they were good significant strikes. He was beating that man to fucking hell. Excuse my language. He was beating the piss out of the man. And Fizdia probably landed like maybe 30 strikes at max. He probably landed like 20 strikes in the round realistically. It was like a 50 significant strike difference. How are you going to say he won the round? He had no control. Bobby Green was walking him down the whole third round, putting the beats on him. Bobby Green was beating him like it was like his life depended on it. Bobby Green was beating him like his family's life depended on it. He was beating that man up like he just said something wrong about, he just disrespected his daughter. You know, he was beating him up like he just disrespected his wife, man. Bobby Green was beating him like a burglar just broke into his house with a knife or a weapon or something. He was beating him like I'm telling you, everything depended on it in that third round. So the fact that there was a judge that gave Fizdia the third round is a total disrespect to the sport. It's a total disservice to Bobby Green and all the fighters, because it's not just Bobby Green that has to be subject to that kind of judging. It's all the fighters. You know, there's a lot of people that get robbed in fights and they win clear rounds. The judges even had Tisha Torres losing. One of the judges, I think one of the judges even had her losing the fight. I want to say one of the judges, did they have her losing the fight or did they have her losing a round? I forget.
I think one of the judges had her losing a round. I didn't think she lost no round. I thought she won every round in dominant fashion. And Angela Hill fan. I'm an Angela Hill fan. And Angela got to the point where she didn't even want to throw a punch because she was getting countered so badly by Tisha's combos and speed that she just started just throwing kicks trying to keep Tisha off of her. That's how badly Tisha was dominating her. So, man, Tisha Torres looked freaking phenomenal. You wouldn't even know that she's been off almost 2 years by her performance Saturday. And we're talking about her fighting Angela Hill, who's probably one of the most active fighters in UFC history. So the way she came out and she looked and she was in shape, she was fast. Hey, strawweight, be careful, because Tisha Torres is back. Now, Bobby Green, I'm going to keep it short because I know we over. There's no way any ref could have gave Fazeez a third round. Fazeez only landed strikes out of defense. What I mean by that is Bobby Green was piecing him up so bad that all he could do was throw punches so that he didn't get finished. Those were defensive punches he was throwing, not offensive punches. Defensive punches are thrown to thwart a person's, the other fighter's offense, not to initiate your own. There's no way Fazeez won that third round. And that judge, I know what he put in the tweet that, you know, Fazeez was aggressive and all that. No, he was not in the third round. Bobby Green was the more aggressive fighter. He walked him down. He was talking trash to him, saying, why you throwing leg kicks? Punch. Let's go. Let's go. Bobby Green was punking Fazeez in the third round. Now, on with Keys. There is no way the third round should have been 10-9. Bobby Green won that third round 10-8. And that's why the 10-8 rule was instituted, because of dominance. Bobby Green dominated Fazeez in the third round. And that's the bottom line of that. That was just judges don't have accountability. They are allowed to score the fight the way they see it, but they have no accountability. Nothing happens to judges who we see, the fans see, as bad judges. Yes, I did have Bobby Green. I thought he looked good in the second round, but I wouldn't be mad if he was down 2-0. But if you make the third round a 10-8 round, guess what? It's a draw. It's a draw. So, yeah, I thought he got shafted, but that's neither here nor there. I think Bobby has to go back, and he needs to become the aggressor in his fights. Stop being the counterpuncher. Make people react to what you're doing instead of you reacting to what they're doing. All right, Keys, any last words, bro?
No. I think that's we pretty much covered everything. We got a lot of stuff. It was a great show. And like I said, thank everybody for listening. And I hope you gained something from tonight's show. You know, that was a play on words. You know, shout out my boy Cyril Gane, new UFC champion. But, yeah, I hope you gained something from tonight's show and took something away from it with, you know, anything, any piece of it. And if you didn't, and you were here anyway, then I appreciate you still. So that's great. And, yeah, everybody enjoy the rest of your week. That's all I got.
For those that listen to the show live, probably the first 20 minutes of the show was probably, you know, there was some gems dropped in that first 20 minutes concerning the vaccine, the UFC, the country, personal decisions, you know, sports organizations. For those that record the show and go back and listen to the first part of the show with attentive ears, and you will see that different opinions. We had different opinions. We agreed on some points, but at the same time, we respected the opinion of the other person or the other persons, and we kept the conversation positive. And that's something that all of us should learn, that even though we feel a certain way, that we have open minds, open ears to what the other person's opinion may be, and we don't try to always poke holes in their argument. We try to listen to their point, maybe, you know, counterpoint them, but we be respectful, and, you know, we respect other people's opinions. That being said, Lee and Keys signing off for the night. Positive people with positive energy, your positive results. And we always end the show with a